Dear friends, let us love one another, for love comes from God. Everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love. We love because God first loved us. Right?
Welcome to the We Collide podcast. We're a growing community of everyday chicks colliding with Jesus in our mess, our pain, our joy, and our stories. We value showing up as we truly are, so that's what you'll find here. Walls and masks being torn down so that we can allow Jesus to meet us where we truly are and hear about other women doing the same. We can't wait to collide with you.
Welcome to the We Collide podcast. I'm Willow Weston, the founder and director of Collide, and I'm so glad that you tuned in this week. I don't know if you tuned in last week, but if you didn't, seriously go back and listen to the interview that I got to do with Bob Goff, the New York Times best-selling author. He's the consul for the Republic of Uganda. He's a lawyer. He's the founder of Love Does, and his books will make you laugh. They'll make you cry. He's amazing. And he came to our last Collide conference that we did for women here in Bellingham, Washington, and we had such an amazing night, and so many lives were impacted. And I also preached that night, and we're going to share with you today in a minute a portion of that talk, not the whole thing, but a portion of it. And I hope that as you listen today and you think about this next year, as we hit, you know, the ground running in January 2019. My hope is that each one of us, that you and I, would really consider, what does it look like to know we're loved this year and to better love this year. And so I hope this message that I gave at our last event challenges and inspires you, and maybe even brings about some healing in your life. So take a listen.
We're called to always love, but it isn't always easy. Love is not easy when our neighbors build their fence on our property line, and it's not easy when their dogs poo in our yard and expect us to pick it up. Love is not easy when the mean girl at school is bullying our kid, and it's not easy when her mom does nothing about it. Love is not easy when our husband is addicted to porn, and it's not easy when our teenagers are groaning and demanding things of us. Love is not easy when our coworkers are snorting all day in the cubicle next to us. And it's not easy when our boss is on a power bender and taking it out on us all day. Love is not easy when a stranger gets confrontational, and it's not easy when a person with different political opinions than ours expresses themselves rudely at our dinner table. And love is not easy when our mother-in-law tells us what we're doing for Christmas. It is not easy when our dad drinks himself into an oblivion and we have to sit across from him at Thanksgiving. Love is not easy, and yet the Bible calls us to love more times than we'd like to admit. John 13:34 says, "As I have loved you, so you must love one another." 1 Peter 4:8 says, "Above everything, love one another earnestly, because love covers over many sins." Romans 13:8 says, "Be under obligation to no one. The only obligation you have is to love one another." 1 John 3:18 says, "My children, our love should not just be words and talk. It must be true love, which shows itself in action." 1 Corinthians 16:14 says, "Do all your work in love." And Luke 6:27 says, "Love your enemies." Here's the truth. I don't have time to read all the places this call to love is spelled out in the Bible. We cannot get out from underneath the call to love if we tried. In fact, Jesus was asked multiple times, "What is the greatest commandment?" And he said, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your soul." And this is the first greatest commandment. And the second, he says, is love your neighbor as yourself. Well, note that Jesus' reply to this question, "What is the greatest commandment?" included not only the first greatest command, but Jesus snuck in a second. The command to love God, he says, is the greatest, but he must have believed the command to love others was so highly important because he always seemed to include the second when asked the first. And if you want to whittle a life down to what is most important when it comes to following God, Jesus made it pretty clear that our greatest call is to love God and love others. But the call to love is so hard that sometimes it sends you into closets. Years ago, and some of you who know me know this story, hurt knocked on my door one ordinary Wednesday. I peered out the peephole and I couldn't do it. I looked out and all I saw was addiction and abandonment and felt anger and bitterness. I literally couldn't bring myself to turn my wrist to the right and let hurt in. And as if I were in grave danger, I took my baby and I ran upstairs and I hid in a closet. And when you're hiding in a closet, there's a few things that are going on. One is that you're waiting for something bad to happen. And two is that you're seeing that you're kind of embarrassed because your baby is noticing that nothing bad is happening and that you're just a big fraidy cat. Nothing bad was happening because hurt was no longer hurting me. So now I was horrified that I'm apparently a wreck of a mom and I'd lost all sense of logic. And I remembered that my infant isn't psychoanalyzing me. No, that's not yet. Right, that's when I'll have to pay for tuition and therapy at the same time in college. And so I took a deep breath. And then I had this moment where I saw myself more clearly than I wanted to. And I saw that I was incapable of loving this person who hurt me. So I was hiding, trying not to get re-injured, but all that was going to do was hurt the person I least wanted to hurt, which was my baby. I didn't have to come out of that closet for God to find me. No, he got right down on that floor and he said, "This is an invitation." And it was that invitation that God ended up using to birth this ministry, Collide, that now brings healing to so many women's lives who need and desire it. But more about that later. So recently, I was preparing for tonight when God met me in the most comical yet profound way. I was reading this passage that I will now read to you from 1 John 4:7-19. "Dear friends, let us love one another, for love comes from God. Everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love. This is how God showed his love among us. He sent his one and only Son into the world that we might live through him. This is love, not that we loved God, but that he loved us and sent his Son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins. Dear friends, since God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. No one has ever seen God, but if we love one another, God lives in us and his love is made complete in us. This is how we know that we live in him and he in us. He has given us his Spirit. And if we have seen and testified that the Father has sent his Son to be the Savior of the world, if anyone acknowledges that Jesus is the Son of God, God lives in them and they in God. And so we know and rely on the love God has for us. God is love. Whoever lives in love lives in God and God in them. And this is how love is made complete among us, so that we will have confidence on the day of judgment. In this world, we are like Jesus. There is no fear in love, but perfect love drives out fear, because fear has to do with punishment. The one who fears is not made perfect in love. We love because God first loved us." Right? So I'm studying this passage for hours trying to unpack this, and I had to go to the bathroom, which is not unusual. And on my way, I ran right into someone I knew and I said, "Hey, Susie Billings." And she introduced me to her friend, and her friend joked and said, "Wow, first and last name, sounds like she was in trouble." And this woman that I have never met, who has no connection to the background story, must have some kind of freaky sonar love radar detecting my inner feelings, because she hit the nail on the head. And my true heart had been exposed. I was caught red-handed with little love, and I laughed it off. Of course not. Of course she's not in trouble. And I went into the bathroom, and I heard this question. You have been sitting here studying this passage about loving others. Why don't you love her? And then I had this epiphany. And I said it, and the words came out of my mouth that perhaps needed to come out for years. I don't love her because she triggers everything in me that feels unlovable. And I realized what is true for all of us. The degree to which we love has everything to do with how loved we believe we are. Do you hear that? Can you resonate with that? The degree to which we love has everything to do with how loved we believe we are. And if this be true, then there's so many things you can conclude about love. And one of those is that you can't put on love like it's a costume. When I ran into Susie Billings the other day, it was almost like I had to put on this giant heart costume and play pump you up music and throw confetti and think about unicorns, all just to play nice with her. I don't feel that way about her. I fake friendliness on the outside with hugs and smiles, but on the inside, I'm full of grief and blame and bitterness and shame. And every time I run into her, I have to hold back my tears as I relive the story, and the story always ends with me being the messed up chick who deserves to be alone while they all have each other. And it sucks. And so in all my embarrassment and sadness and self-sabotaging glory, I become this cheesy, heart-wearing Christian chick trying to look loving and failing at it miserably. And maybe I try to cover up my shame and blame with phony love to fool them, or maybe it's to fool me. And sometimes I think that's what we do. We might be devastated or vengeful or jealous, but we try to dress it up in love to cover what's really underneath. We pretend we love our family at family reunions, and we fake that we like that annoying chick in our book club, and we invite people to Thanksgiving, but begrudgingly, like, I hope you don't come, but here's your obligatory invite. And we ask people how they are, but we might not even care how they are because they're not nice and they never said sorry. And we say we'll pray for people, but is that just a period on the end of a conversation so we can get them to stop talking about their problems? This giant, cheesy heart costume cannot cover up the fact that what's underneath might not be love. And this pretend state of the heart is not who you and I are called to be. The call to love is not a call to be fake, but a call to truly, authentically love. And you know what? You can't love well because it's a rule to follow. Some of us have been trying to love because we're good little girls. But can you really love because someone's commanding you to? I remember walking home in college with my boyfriend, and I asked him in a state of drunkenness if he thought he wanted to marry me. I mean, can you imagine, right? Some chick in a drunken stupor, slurring her love all over the place, like, you wanna marry me, Drew? Right? And like any other highly normal 20-year-old man, Drew hesitated to sign on the dotted line or even go there with his head and his heart. And it wasn't as though I proposed, but I had this moment where in my deep need to be loved and chosen. I was looking for him to promise that this great thing that we had together would last forever. And he didn't give me what I wanted. Not a promise or I'm not going anywhere. It was more of an aloof sophomore in college guy answer that probably finished with a sincere, "I love you, babe." That wasn't enough for me. I loved Drew so much that I couldn't bear the idea of experiencing the pain of him someday leaving me, so I left him. Have you ever done that? Have you ever been so afraid of getting hurt by someone that you ended up hurting them? For months to come, Drew was devastated, and he would try to win me back. And though I wanted that, my incapability to risk getting hurt by someone I loved sent him packing to another college. And before he left, we sat in his car with all of his belongings, and he expressed to me what I wanted to hear the night I drunkenly begged for it. He loved me. He got out a ring. And he basically said, "Marry me or else." I had a man saying what I'd probably been waiting for since I was little. "I love you, I choose you, and I don't want to be without you." And I looked at Drew in his agony, but I knew that I couldn't say yes to being married in this way under threat and distress. He was on the edge of a cliff with a "marry me or else," and I agonized that my no might actually land him at the bottom, which would kill us both. William Barclay said, "Love is of necessity the free response of the heart, and therefore God, by a deliberate act of self-limitation, had to endow men with free will. Even God would not make us love him." He knew that that wouldn't be true love. True love has to be a choice, and if so, then love cannot be forced, demanded, threatened, guilted, or even obligated. Any of those would not be real love any more than me saying yes to getting married to someone threatening to kill themselves would be an assurance of love's truth. Had I said yes to Drew, we both would have woken up every day of our lives wondering if I was with him because he threatened it, or if he was with me only because I obligated it. If love cannot be forced or demanded, then why would Jesus command it? In all the examples where you see Jesus mentioning the great command, notice something. He's always responding to experts in the law. When Jesus responded to experts in the law, we have to know that Jesus was talking their talk, because that's what Jesus does, right? To fishermen, he talks fish. To farmers, he talks harvest. And to lawyers, he talks law. And this lawyer wanted to know the law so he could follow all the rules, and Jesus gave him a rule that he will break again and again. Why would Jesus do that? Does he not take seriously the law? Jesus was present in the beginning when God established the earth and made man and woman and gave us free will. And Jesus knew that love cannot be something we do out of force or law or religious duty or fear or obligation or anything else for that matter. In fact, just like us, God hopes that we will choose to love him because we want to, not because we're made to. Jesus knew that you don't love someone because you share DNA. You don't love someone because they're in your orbit. You don't love someone because your pastor told us to love. Love is not something we check off a list. Love is not something we follow like we follow the speed limit. Love is not like paying for parking so you don't get a parking ticket. Love is not like etiquette at a dinner table, putting your napkin on your lap and eating with your mouth closed so people don't judge you. And love is not like paying taxes, something you have to do or else. Love is not something we adhere to with little or no affect. You can't love like a flipping robot and go through the motions and put love on autopilot. No, love is not something you can do without bringing your heart with you. And Jesus knew that. So when he said loving God and loving others were the greatest commands, don't you think that Jesus knew. Because we want to be good, perfect, looking little religious rule followers. We would try to love and get about 25 minutes down the road and realize that we might not love as well as we hoped. Don't you think that he knew he would command this and then our grudges and our racism and our selfish motives would sneak out and we would be the biggest rule-breaking lovers there ever was? I'm starting to wonder if when Jesus commanded love, he was inviting us into something greater than a rule to follow, something greater than I've ever realized. Matthew 5:17 proves that Jesus did take seriously the law. He said, I have not come to abolish the law, but to fulfill it. Jesus himself would become all that our empty attempts to love aren't. Jesus coming down and colliding with humanity was to show all of us struggling to love what love looks like. So where does failing at this love thing land us if it can't be put on and faked and it can't be pulled off by living like a robotic religious rule follower? It landed me in a counseling office. I stepped out of that closet years ago and I walked into a counseling office and I began to explain that I couldn't do it. I couldn't love the person on the other side of the door. And the counselor suggested that I limit my time with that person, and I yelled at the counselor, which is rather unlike me. And that was the day that I broke down for all of us. And I started to see my whole story and your whole story differently. They hurt me and they hurt you because someone hurt them and they just hadn't gotten Jesus's healing yet. And now we're hurt and we're hurting others. And I'm wounded and you're wounded and she's wounded and she's wounded. And we're walking around and we're colliding with each other and we're wounding each other. And we're in need of a new kind of collision, one where we walk away more whole than broken. And something began rising up in me in that office. The counselor wasn't talking. And I just started pleading and begging and crying, saying, what will our avoidance of hurt do to heal so that she stops hurting others? And what good will keeping the door shut and not letting them in do for their pain? And what will our uptight, self-righteous, judgmental, safe faith that keeps its distance and doesn't enter mess do for our families and our communities and our world? So when this counselor suggested that I push hurt away, I yelled, no. I've got to figure out how to love the people who wounded me the most. That's what Jesus does, and that's what I have to do. See, because every time I see Jesus collide with people, he loves them and they change. They are left more whole than broken. Jesus loved Peter when he was a two-timey, no-good deceiver, and he became the rock of the church. Jesus loved Zacchaeus when he was a dirty, lying cheat of a tax collector, and he gave half of it away to the poor. Jesus loved the get-around girl whose getting around hurt a trail of people she left behind her, and she was used to change her whole village. I broke in that counseling office because I couldn't shake Jesus and his love for wounded people. I was being called to figure this love thing out regardless of how hard it would ever be. And so I gave the counselor her $85. I have no idea what she said, but as I walked to my car, the counselor said, you're going to do something with those two words, wounded collision. And by the looks of tonight, I guess he was right. I think Jesus knew that we wouldn't love well because it's a command. I think he knew the command to love others would land us, just like me, needing God. And when we need God, we go looking for God. And when we go looking for God, we find God. And when we find God, he's so beautiful that all we want to do is love him back and be like him. See, isn't that interesting that the second greatest command, loving others, catalyzes the first, loving God? The law to love and failing at it leads us to who's acing it, and who's acing it? Jesus is acing it. And so our failure to love over and over again invites us to collide with capital L love. And the more we do, the more we know that we are Peter and we are Zacchaeus and we are the woman at the well, the get around girl, broken, messy, failing, but oh, so loved. See, our love does not reveal how well we follow the rules. Our love reveals how well we follow Jesus and allow him to love us. You can't love from a closet protecting yourself from pain. I really blew it in this friendship deal, and just by her presence, this Susie Billings chick always reminds me of that. She doesn't mean to, she just does. I felt rejected and left out by this friendship experience, and that triggered the little girl in me that hides in closets. And I was sure that I wouldn't be chosen. And I experienced a few things that made me feel that way, and then I got insecure and weird, and I started up building walls and avoiding and protecting myself. I started making up stories in my own head and blaming and assuming, and I botched up the entire thing and gave these friends a lot of ammunition to distance themselves from me. And then that brought shame and embarrassment and more hiding and grief, which all made those that I wanted to love me even less. And then that caused me to love them even less and myself a whole lot less. Maybe you can resonate on this. All ended in a breakup that may never be reconciled. And it created such a vast hole of a crevice that I literally look at it and it's so large that I have no idea how I could ever gap it. What a mess. So apparently I ran back into the closet hiding again. And I thought that the only way that I could come out and love people was by putting on this costume and faking it. But Jesus is calling me out of that hiding place again. And I bet if you're in there, he's calling you out too. C.S. Lewis says in The Four Loves, to love it all is to be vulnerable. Love anything and your heart will be wrung and possibly broken. If you want to make sure of keeping it intact, you must give it to no one, not even an animal. Wrap it carefully round with hobbies and little luxuries and avoid all entanglements. Lock it up safe in the casket or coffin of your selfishness. But in that casket, safe, dark, motionless, airless, it will change. It will not be broken. It will become unbreakable, impenetrable, irredeemable. To love, he says, is to be vulnerable. Maybe that's what we're doing. We're protecting ourselves from being vulnerable. Because if we hide, then we can't get hurt. And if we lock ourselves up, we'll be safe. And if we break up with them, then they can't break up with us. And I wonder if C.S. Lewis, if he were to peer into our lives, would he say that we've become unbreakable, impenetrable in our relationships, irredeemable at our own choice out of fear of being vulnerable? The very definition of the word vulnerable is capable of being wounded or hurt. And some of us in this place tonight have made it almost impossible to get hurt because there's just been too much pain and you're not sure that you can handle anymore. But guess what? Love requires vulnerability. Love hurts. And maybe that's what Jesus was getting at with his entire life and his entire death. I love how the psalmist in Psalm 18 describes God hearing his cries. God saw the pain in wreck relationships and mistake and fear. And the psalmist says, God reached down from on high and took hold of me. That's Jesus. Jesus is God reaching down and taking hold of us. God chose to crash into the earth from the heavens for you and I. He collided with us in all this mess, and he made himself fully vulnerable, capable of pain and suffering, rejection and abandonment. His love invited mockery, torture, and punishment. His love felt hunger. It had no place to lie its head. Jesus' love walked alongside people and was faithful through and through, and they still walked away from him at the drop of a rooster crowing. He too understood what it was like to ask for a forever commitment, and people in fear couldn't say yes. He experienced the joy of a kiss that turned out to be betrayal. He heard the whispers of people talking about him behind his back. He knew what it was like to be used for what he could do rather than valued for who he was. And the anger that nailed him to the cross took its lashing out on his back. And he took on all the names they called you. And the abuse that happened to you happened to him on the cross. And his clothes were torn off and put on another man's back while he stayed there, pierced for our transgressions. On that cross is every reason they didn't show up for us. On that cross is the disparity that begs for love and the disparity that leads to self-harm. On that cross is all the fake, plastic, fraudulent, legalistic attempts to love that only hurt. And on that cross are all the reasons they left us out. On that cross dies every reason you've ever believed the lie that you're unlovable, small, and insignificant. And on that cross dies all the ways you've ever made anyone feel that way. On that cross is evil, oppression, cancer, and depression. Every elephant in every room and every skeleton in every closet on that cross. Jesus took it all upon himself because his love compelled him to. God, the one who could have stayed in the heavens, he came. The one whose power stopped the hemorrhaging of a suffering woman. He, the one who touched the lepers that no one else would touch and healed them. He, the one who entered a cutter's desperation and saved his life. The one whose power raised a dead man back to life, had the power to jump off the cross. This one who could tell the waves and the wind to be still and his accusers would be silenced. He could have spoken a word and they would have been, but he didn't. He hung there, suffering in the most unadulterated, undeserved, bloody, torturous death. Wide open to our hatred and blame, naked to man's mistakes and nastiness, exposed to humanity's sin and ready to take it all upon himself. This God that we say we believe in, this God that we say we follow, this God that we say we want to be like, his love hurts. His love is open to pain because he knows that his love is what we all need. In fact, his love is the only thing that we can bring into all of our collisions that will change our homes and our families and our churches and our government and our generation and the next generation and the next generation. And his love, it won't hide and it won't run because of our great capability of wounding him. No, his love was why he was willing to be vulnerable so that you would always know how loved you are. I walked into this church one Sunday morning and I was taken aback right over there. I don't know, maybe the eighth row back. And I tell this story, by the way, in our new Bible study, which I'll show it to you. We're so excited about this tonight, the birds and the lilies, and we're giving you guys the first opportunity to get it. And we've heard amazing feedback about how it's impacting lives. But this story is in this Bible study. So I'm sitting over in that chair, and Ron, who leads worship here, introduced a new song called Good, Good Father. And Ron likes to teach people here a song before they sing it. I think it's his way of inviting us into authentically meaning what we sing rather than going through the church motions. So Ron was doing his thing and started strumming to this song, and all the voices around me began to sing these words. You're a good, good father. It's who you are. And I'm loved by you. It's who I am. And out of nowhere, I just started weeping. And the tears were streaming down my cheeks. I looked like a Kardashian in an unexpected rainstorm, right? With like makeup falling off my face. But I just don't know how to do this. Like, I don't know how to be a daughter to a dad. And maybe that's why I needed to hear and wanted to hear from Drew what I'd been waiting for my whole life. See, I wanted a dad who would love me and choose me and stay. I wanted him to not be okay without me, but that just wasn't the case for me. So I don't know how to do this father-daughter thing. I don't know how to open up and be that vulnerable. I don't know how to crawl into a dad's lap and let him fully embrace and love me. And so this song comes on and it identifies our father. And as I sang it, it identified me. And as I fell apart trying to sing it, I found myself digging down deep. And in what can be a vulnerable move for you and I prayed this prayer that I've prayed so many times since. God, help me know how to be a daughter. Help every cell of my body to believe that I am loved by you, that it's who I am because it's who you are. And friends, there's just been too much hurt and pain. And I think it's been really easy to forget who we are and whose we are. It's not always easy to love, but it sure seems easy to push love away. And tonight, if I can invite you into anything, I would invite you tonight to let God love you. Let the walls come down and be vulnerable with God and tell him you don't know how to be a daughter to him. Crawl up in his lap and let all the reasons that you feel unlovable fall away in his presence. Because here's the deal. The work of loving others isn't mustering some sort of fake, cheesy, inauthentic, robotic, rule-following act to look like we're loving. The work of loving others begins by allowing God's love to penetrate the places and spaces inside of us that don't yet believe they're lovable. The Bible says in 1 John 4:19, we love because he first loved us. Our capability to love others is in direct proportion to our ability to let God love us. And maybe that's why we've kind of been flopping it at loving people when it's hard. Because we've been trying to love from a place other than love. And we often love from all the wrong places. In fact, we have a class coming up where we're going to, some Clyde staffers and I are going to be helping you locate the places that you've been trying to love at. So check that out. Because we love from these places like fear, insecurity, control, guilt, penance, selfishness, self-protection, desperation, and duty. And you can try to love out of those places, but it won't work because you can only love out of love. The Bible says that love comes from God. In fact, that God is love. God is the source of love. He's the origin of love. You can't muster it up yourself. You can't pretend it into existence. If you don't feel love, you know where to go. You got to go to the one whose storehouses don't run out of love because he himself is love. Is loving hard? Yes. Is it scary? Yes. Is it challenging? Yes. Does it require vulnerability? Yes. Could we get hurt? Yes. But 1 John 4:18 says there is no fear in love.
I hope that you getting the opportunity to listen to that message on love both challenged and inspired you. And I kept on preaching, but I'll hold it back for today. But what I want to leave us with is that the invitation is yours. And the invitation is this, that if you allow yourself to be loved, it will then be that you best love. And I'm still trying to figure out personally what that looks like for me. And I'm still praying that prayer to God, asking Him to help me to know what it looks like to be a daughter to a father. And I'm still needing healing for wounds that have been inflicted upon me. And I'm still battling the lies that I believe that convinced me that somehow there's parts of me that are unlovable. But the more that I collide with Jesus, the more that He heals all of that, the more that He replaces those lies with truth, the more that He fights my battles, the more healing that He does, the more that I pray and He answers those prayers, the more I'm able to receive His love. And the more I'm able to receive His love, the more I'm able to truly love people. Not from a place of following the rules, not from a place of falsehood, not from a place of being fake or feeling like I have to, but from a genuine place of truly loving. So I invite you to come along with me to keep colliding. And the more that you receive God's love, the more you'll be able to love those who are really hard to love in your life. This year, may we look back and see that we've become a more loving people. Let's do it together. We'll catch you next week. And in the meantime, if you want to check out our next event that we're having for women or our counseling and mentoring program, or come and hop on our store because you have a gift that you want to give to a girlfriend, or you want to check out what we're about, come find us at wecollide.net. And if you have time today, it would be so helpful if you would go to iTunes and give us a little review there so that more and more people can keep colliding on the We Collide podcast. Bless you today, and we'll catch you next week.